I'm Mike Smalley again, and I will help wrap up the session today, and I would like to talk about battling rosette disease in the Great Plains. Definitely has global implications, but most of my talk today will be relevant to basically the lower 48. And rosette disease was first recognized in 1940 up in Canada, as I recall. And certainly in Oklahoma, where I live and work, we've been dealing with it for multiple decades as well. However, we called it witch's broom because we really didn't know what caused it until about 3 or 4 years ago. But we certainly knew what it looked like, and we knew that it was ultimately fatal. And so we've come a long ways, again, just the last 4 or 5 years, yet despite battling it, though, for over 30, maybe 35 years, we've made baby steps at best. We now know, thanks to the University of Arkansas, that it's a virus that causes this disease. And so that's certainly progress. And currently, the people most affected are in the central towards the eastern states, both northern and southern states of the U.S., which I'll show in just a few moments and further explain this disease. And sadly, we have a pretty outdated map, but this is what we have to date, and certainly this begs getting this updated. But I can speak certainly for Oklahoma, where I work, that most of that state should be in red. Certainly the eastern part, for sure, if not clear up almost to the panhandle, should be in red. So this is a little bit misleading, but that's what we have on record, and that's one of many things that needs to be improved as we battle rosette. And so there's several things to blame, but one of the issues is the introduction of multiflora rose that we brought over from Asia is literally a magnet for rosette disease and aerified mites, which I'm going to further explain in a minute. You can also see on this map that this is most damaging and relevant to growers and consumers as you get north of I-20. I've definitely worked south of I-20, and it's next, if not impossible, to find rosette disease. Certainly it's been discussed about a suspected case down in Houston not too long ago, but by and large, it's north of I-20 today. You can also find it over in the western part of the United States, but in limited areas and higher elevations. And so objectives that we're working at, we being Oklahoma State University as well as Kansas State University, is currently we're screening in replicated fashion over 60 cultivars for resistance to this disease. We have to start somewhere because right now we're assuming all plants, all rose cultivars are susceptible to rosette disease. And then secondly, we want to determine the best BMPs to combat this disease, both at the commercial and consumer level, to allow us to continue growing roses as I mentioned earlier, because given our track record with the baby steps we're making, we may be stuck with this disease for quite some time to come. So at the very least, we can learn how to manage it as a chronic disease, so to speak. I mentioned earlier it's a plant virus, again, found from University of Arkansas. You can read that work. And still, after all these years, we're still pretty certain that it's only specific to or is specific to rose species and roses alone, which is a good thing. It's bad enough the way it is with that plant. I already mentioned the multiflora rose is one of our enemies, so to speak, in terms of harboring the virus and also aerified mites that vector that disease. Again, multiflora rose, as well as well-meaning that we brought these over and we use them for legitimate purposes, and we still do, as far as this disease is concerned, this is a very problematic type of plant to even have even near vicinity of a commercial, a retail grower, or even a consumer, for that matter. You would think it'd be easy to get rid of multiflora rose, but despite multiple herbicide applications, despite multiple mowings or physically trying to remove multiflora rose, it's not that easy. It's also very, very prolific. Some authorities have shown you can have 500,000 seeds on a mature and large one specimen of multiflora rose. So it's and of course, like a lot of weedy plants, those seeds can lie dormant in the soil for years. So you're battling this for many, many years after you physically remove those multiflora roses, if you've gone to that effort. And again, we've been with multiple sclerosis for many, many years, but until the advent or when we started noticing Rose-Rosette disease, did we realize we made a major mistake, at least in terms of this malady or this issue that we're dealing with. So as I mentioned earlier, it's a very specific mite. It's a microscopic mite, so that further compounds, making it more difficult to deal with this. You can't see it with the naked eye. I don't care how young you are, you're going to have magnification. Miticides are controversial. A lot of the people that have worked with them have not found them to be efficacious. However, some of the earlier work that I've read and also worked with my colleague Jen Olson, a plant pathologist that's working with me on this project, she's taught me that some of the latest research where they're using these in a really vigilant and aggressive manner at the very highest rates weekly for 1 to 2 years, they are starting to get on top of the mites. But realistically, in the real world, the average person is not going to be successful to date that much with miticides per se. So I think there's perhaps some other more realistic means that we can teach the average person as we do outreach or extension, and that's what I do. One of those practical means that we're doing is literally cutting that shrub back by at least 2/3 as we approach wintertime, physically removing a great deal of the mites, the lion's share of the mites, but also then hitting what's left just above that butter graft union with a dormant oil. So it's kind of a 1-2 punch. You're physically removing a lot of the vectors, the mites, but then you're also smothering what you did leave behind. So even then, it's still challenging. So there's the mite magnified, you know, thousands of times. And management of Rose-Rosette disease, again, it's going to vary whether you're commercial or consumer. And I've alluded to that a little bit. I'm going to mention a couple other techniques before I wrap up here in a couple minutes. One of the challenges with aerified mites is they're wind-blown. And that's true of a lot of other aerified mite species that don't cause Rose-Rosette disease. So you're really up against quite a battle there. Even if you think you can contain them with pesticides, they oftentimes have moved on up in the wind currents and gone on to their next host. Now, the good news is if you can remove them, as I alluded to earlier, from the plant and killing that plant, they will quickly starve to death if they don't have live rose tissue within, I think it's 6 to 8 hours. So there are ways to overcome them, but it's not easy. It's not always practical. And it's a lot of work, to say the least. And that's why Rose-Rosette disease is so rampant throughout a great deal of the eastern part of the United States. Some of the symptoms. And this is where it gets tricky because some rose cultivars differ amongst their thorniness habits. So you really have to know what kind of rose or roses you're working with, clearly. But once you train yourself to know what's the norm or normal for that cultivar, then you can say, okay, yes, these prickles are beyond normal, and that starts getting your antennae up, particularly when you couple with other suspicious symptoms that it could be Rose-Rosette disease. There's that typical witch's brooming, very compressed, very short inner nodes. You have fasciation where you have flattened stems below that slide sometimes, fasciated stems. The buds become very distorted. They will not go ahead and open up. And a lot of times it'll look like thrips damage. I know for a fact I've misdiagnosed early Rose-Rosette in the past because I didn't have it at this stage of the witch's broom. I just had the distorted blooms, and I thought, that's thrips damage. And I should have taken that extra step to really figure out, was it thrips or was it aerified mites? So it's easy to mess up if you don't keep these factors in mind, particularly in the early stages of the disease. Also, leaf distortion. The leaves can be quite more narrow than the norm, and strap-like in appearance, and cupping as well. Now, the one problem that you can sometimes mix up with Rose-Rosette disease is glyphosate or Roundup injury. But once you train your eye, usually you can tell the difference. I will say, though, I've been guilty on really early infections of Rose-Rosette or not really knowing the history of whether glyphosate was applied or not. I messed up. So even seasoned horticulturists can goof up on that, so to speak. So that's where a good pathologist comes into play and let he or she, go ahead and figure out if you indeed have the virus or not. But glyphosate or Roundup is one of those look-alike issues. And, of course, that's a very prevalent herbicide, despite all the hysteria with cancer and that sort of thing that we see in the news right now. I mentioned the flowers are distorted, reduced, or blighted. You can see, and I'm not picking on this cultivar. This is, you know, for thousands of types of roses. But you certainly have an off-colored rose. You have the flowers that are not opening normally. And then you're seeing on that lower right couple with deformed reddish malformed foliage, which I'm going to show a little bit in greater detail in just a couple of minutes. There's that typical witch's broom in the middle. So out of the blue, you'll see an area that, again, has very condensed or shortened internodes, that typical witch's broom, which, by the way, because roses are normally deciduous in the wintertime, it's even easier to distinguish when you have a deciduous or naked plant. You're going to see that really interesting growth formation we call witch's broom. But even in the summertime, with a trained eye, you can start picking up on it. In fact, it'll stand out like a sore thumb once you train yourself. Abnormal thickening or succulence of stems. Sometimes the secondary shoots end up being wider diameter caliper than the main shoot. And it should be just the opposite. When you see that coupled with the succulence and maybe perhaps the reddened growth, or sometimes the fasciated growth that I mentioned earlier, the flattened stems, the fasciation, all those are telltale signs of rose rosette disease more often than not. Just a compilation of issues. Most of these I've gone over. But the upper right is one that really, as we work with consumers, is a real challenge because, as we know, most rose cultivars will come out with red growth in the spring. But one of the things I try to tell consumers, the average rose cultivar, that red growth will go ahead and mature to green. It'll transition to green as summer ensues. But with rose rosette disease, not only will the red persist oftentimes, but the leaves then will start to become distorted. So that's really will hone you in. It's like, oh yeah, that's not normal for that cultivar. That's either glyphosate, which is usually not the case. More likely it's rose rosette disease that's afflicted your plant. Other consequences, and this is certainly a partial list as we learn more about the disease, as I interact more with my entomology and plant pathology colleagues. These plants end up being more predisposed or more sensitive to powdery mildew and black spots, so it's kind of a vicious cycle. Once you get this disease, other problems escalate as well. I mentioned flowering performance, and after all, that's why we're growing these roses. They won't open completely. They're blighted. I've already mentioned that. And then lastly, particularly depending on where you live, they're going to be less tolerant to even average winter temperatures. They don't have to be, you know, off the charts. So they go into the winter with lower starch or photosynthate levels, and a lot of times they will not overwinter. You'll have more winter damage because of the disease. And a little bit of good news. This is a partial list. It's also a controversial list. Not everybody agrees with this. But the current school of thought is there's certainly some hope, if not a lot of hope, with our American rose species. And this, again, is a partial list. And by the way, so I don't look elitist here, and after all, this is an internationally oriented session today, there's also hope with at least one rose from North Africa and some other areas of the world. But for the United States, these are a few that just happen to also be in the South, either naturalized or usually native to Oklahoma and surrounding areas. So even though we've taken some of these for granted, they might be very valuable in breeding programs to introduce resistance to future selections. And again, future possibilities. And yeah, this is, I forgot I had this in here. With over 100 species of rosa, that in my mind shows promise that we'll either deliberately or stumble on something somewhere that will give us resistance, if not immunity. But because we're looking at a needle in a haystack, we have thousands of cultivars to wade through. In my mind, it's going to take some time for this to happen. Nevertheless, I consider the future bright for reducing the incidence of RRD through future breeding programs and then also learning to deal with this plant problem as a chronic disease, much like we do with a lot of human diseases. We may not cure it in the foreseeable future, but we'll learn to live with it. Right now, most authorities will say you can get 3 to 4 years lifespan out of an infected plant. Now, that is controversial. Different people have given me different numbers, but that's usually what I read. So once you see symptoms, you can usually get another 3 to 4 years if you handle the plant correctly, and I'll mention maybe some possibilities for doing that. Before I do that, though, there's also Rosa bracteata. While it does get rose rosette disease, for whatever reason or reasons, it's resistant initially to the mite itself. So that's another angle that people could look at for combating this problem. And then, of course, genetically modified roses, which is for another day and for another speaker. What are we doing at Kansas State and Oklahoma State today? And as our outreach or extension component, we put out fact sheets and posters to educate people. What do the symptoms look like? What to look for? And then more importantly, how to react to that. And then lastly, as I alluded to earlier, we have replicated trials both at Oklahoma State and Kansas State universities for public observation to interact with growers and to start hopefully finding cultivars that over in replicated fashion over several years, despite their pressure around the rose rosette disease, hopefully some of those will not contract the disease, and then we can make those suggestions to plant breeders for future promising hybrids. There's some of the deliverables that we've cranked out to date that you can certainly get from that website or any of us at Oklahoma State or Kansas State University on this project. Again, a fact sheet that goes over for both retail and commercial people how to deal with the plant. I'm running out of time today to get in greater detail about pruning and some of the other issues, but I've given you the highlights of where we're at with the disease and where we may be going. And speaking of where we may be going, again, as Jason and I hopefully find and other people throughout the country, Dave Byrne, Texas A&M, Mark Windham, University of Tennessee, several people are looking at this problem. And if they find plants with resistance, then they can again hand those over to plant breeders and we can start getting some traction. In the interim or in the meantime, what I want to do at the very least is educate people how to live with the disease. Life's going to go on. We're not going to get rid of roses. We've had to reassure our industry that we're their friend, not their enemy. We want people to continue to grow roses. We just want them to grow them in a more educated fashion, perhaps. More work needs to be looked at. Miticides that might be successful for the average person where you won't have to be as aggressive or as expensive as schedules it takes right now for suppression. I mentioned oils and dormant pruning as a remedy as well. And then lastly, disrupting rose monocultures. So people are quick to pick on knockout some of these other roses, but the truth of the matter is they're so beautiful we have monocultures. And a lot of the roses before the knockouts were probably just as susceptible. They just weren't in those great of plantings or tight of densities. So regardless of the rose that we want to pass judgment on, we're thinking if we can break those up with non-rose plantings intermittently. There's been some work that shows that will stop or temporarily at least slow down that mite that is wind-blown. So you can get in the literature, read about miscanthus and other tall grasses that have intercepted the mite, other woody plants that have intercepted the mite, things of that nature. And speaking of intercepting the mites, when people say, well, my miniature roses are more resistant, most of the literature says they're really not, but they're so low to the ground, they're not catching the mites as frequently as some of the more, or the taller or more upright roses. So, again, most roses across the board, unfortunately, are quite susceptible. Again, I mentioned this earlier about avoiding mass plantings, diversify, and then consequently slow down the spread of this. I need to wrap up. There's some of our contact information. Have time for maybe one question, then we'll be around afterwards as well. We'll wrap this session.